Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was heaven or hell.
Lemon face. Lemon face. All right.
Ooga cha cha, ooga cha cha, ooga cha cha, ooga ooga. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm tired of believing that you're in love with me. Hello, everybody, welcome to the podcast.
So 375.
This is Jorge.
I'm a mental gymnast doing flips right over my nightmares. It's Matty Ding Dong.
This is Ree!
Yeah.
Dude, I'm gassed out, brother.
Yeah, we came too hard before the show.
That's it. That's the show.
It's like, now I have no voice. It's fucking sound like Mike Ness after he smoked a carton of cigarettes.
I was like, summon the sun person.
I'm feeling it. That's so, pretty good.
So how you fellas been?
Good, good. Patreon just got some good shit.
An hour of good shit.
Yeah, they got a bunch of stuff. Yeah, man, it's been a fun week. Just fucking shooting commercials, eating pie, fucking doing the thing, watching some movies. We'll talk about one of them tonight.
Cool!
Booked a trip to Japan.
Cool!
With the homie Rick.
Trip to Japan and yeah. I'll go with a man.
Man named Rick.
A man named Rick when he sucked that dick.
Yeah. That's dope.
Wait a minute.
He better
suck that dick. He better suck that dick. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's up.
When are you going to Japan?
February 8th through 20th.
Yeah, that's a good time.
It is.
Valentine's Day.
I'll be.
You know what, dude? The fucking cherry blossoms, full bloom, brother.
If you go April. On a bullet train at that time of year, everything's neon.
Super. I'm actually going to be on the bullet train because we're flying into Osaka.
Are you okay, dude?
I am losing my voice. We're flying into Osaka. We're doing like 5 days in Osaka. A day and a half in Kyoto, and then we're doing like 5 days in Tokyo.
Chug some of that honey, homeboy.
For real. I already drank my... That goddamn Blink-182 song just fucked my voice.
It was worth it, though.
It was so worth it.
It was worth it, man. Was great. That's some good content right there, boy. Cool. Yeah. Cool.
What did you watch?
Did you watch any horror stuff?
Horror-y things. I watched Santa Slay, as is my Christmas tradition.
As one does.
It's still amazing. I got to show it to somebody who had never seen it before. And
somebody that you...
When I don't think they fully grasped how awesome it is that Santa is played by a Jewish wrestler. And
what do you have against that?
And I think it's great.
Oh, good.
And he spears a guy.
What does she have against that?
Through a deli counter. I just think she didn't understand the magic of it. Like Santa being played by
does
a Jewish
does she not
wrestler.
Understand the totalitarianism of the Jewish people?
I don't think she understands that Santa's not a Jew. So I think that might be the thing.
That's debatable.
Is it? Are you marking that already?
Santa's not a Jew.
That's dope. Yeah. I've had a. It's been a while.
It's been a while
since we recorded, and I don't remember all that I did. But this week has been good. It's been a nice week.
Well, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good. What about you?
What about you, little homie?
Sophia and I.
Hi, took Sophia. A trip.
Hi, Sophia. Let me fucking quit that voice. We went to Los Angeles and saw Waze Blood, which is Natalie Merring's psychedelic folk chamber pop stuff.
Does she play a banjo?
Don't do it.
Then fuck her.
Yeah.
And dude, she plays a fucking... Her last thing, she came out for a second encore with just the acoustic.
You can't say
it was fucking transfixing.
You can't say it's folk unless it's... Bonga banga bonga banga bonga banga bonga banga
bonga bonga bonga
bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga
bonga bonga bonga bonga
bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga
bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga bonga. She describes herself as...
Is it experimental, dude?
Inya meets Bob Seger.
That sounds like two shitty things.
But when you put them together, it's delicious.
There's a band called The Briefs that has a song called Kill Bob Seger Right Now.
If I hear Yamo be there one more time, I'm going to Yamo
kill my brains out.
This week, we're seeing The Smile in Los Angeles.
Oh. Oh, you really like that movie, dude.
The movie is much better than either of you gave it credit for.
No, I...
We all kind of gave it.
Universally. We're seeing the band The Smile.
Which is way better than the movie.
Oh, fucking... no question.
Night at the Museum.
It might be better than the last Radiohead album. Oh!
I mean, are any radio?
Dude, the album is actually, it's not even been out a year.
What was the last Radiohead?
Moon-shaped Pool. It was dope. It was good. It was sad.
You know
that
what
came
else?
Out with well, all no the, shit, right? That it came out with all the good, like, newspaper shit. Oh, dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dex Dark. There's a good-ass song on there.
You might be right, but overall, you might be wrong.
I think I'm wrong. There's tracks on there on Moon-shaped Pool that are stronger. But as an album hanging together, I think I like A Light to Attract Attention. And Donovan's listening to this. He's going to go. Chico might be there.
Oof. I accidentally called Donovan fat.
And he's like, sorry, Donovan, I'm going to do the bit. He's like, text me. Let's meet up for The Smile. Chico's supposed to come with his girlfriend, too.
You're I'm like, nope. Oh, never mind.
I don't know. No, because I haven't seen Chico in like 20 years. He doesn't understand my anxiety. He doesn't get it. You know what I mean? What if Chico judges me? What if I judge him?
I get you.
I don't know who Chico is, but fuck Chico.
What if I have to make jokes about Chico's favorite band being Red Hot Chili Peppers in high school?
They're playing in Japan while I'm there, and I'm tempted to go see him.
Don't spend the money.
There's a hardcore band called Alia that's playing while I'm out there, and I'm like, oh, I might see Alia in Japan.
Dude, it's all lining up.
It is, dude. It's all the stars.
It's all happening, dude.
Yeah.
I want to mention a couple things. Don't freak out because it's not Great British Bake Off, okay? It's quick. Guillermo del Toro's on a roll, if you ask me. Well, no shit. He's Guillermo del Toro.
But I don't think he's ever done anything.
Pinocchio?
Okay.
Pinocchio?
Wait.
Pinocchio?
Last year he did that fucking, what was it? Nightmare Alley, which I fucking loved. And that last scene was just like, oh! You know, where he becomes the geek. Right, that's some good shit. And then now he's got Cabinet of Curiosities. Oh! And then this Pinocchio movie is good stuff. And he said it during fascist Italy.
As he's wont to do.
So it's like Pan's Labyrinth Pinocchio.
It's like, we get it, bro. You like dictators.
It uses that... It's a ballsy thing to do because everyone's association with Pinocchio is automatically, obviously, the Disney one. And
also, there's like 50 Pinocchio movies come out this year.
Exactly. And this is animated, and it's stop motion, and it's fucking gorgeous stop motion animation.
Okay, I'm super in. I've been wanting to watch it. I just haven't had a chance.
The kids, it'll give them the good propaganda in their heads, too. This is the stuff you want them to have.
They have enough propaganda in this household. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry. What? You show them A Bug's Life?
Yeah.
That's propaganda.
Yeah.
That's when the proletariat overtakes the fucking owners.
A nature proletariat.
Hey, that's good. That's at the drive-in. That's good shit. That's from Via.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite album of theirs. Okay. The other thing.
Casino Out guy.
Quick. I'm going to do it quick. I watched Avatar The Way of Water last night.
Oh, I want to see it.
It's 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Guess who's not going to be watching
it? I just want to tell. Let me get my spiel out real quick. It's 3 hours, 15 minutes.
I want to see it.
Do not bet against James Cameron.
No.
Does anybody ever?
Yes, they do, and now they're already... No one wants to see three
motherfuckers,
sequels.
Motherfuckers be like, Avatar wasn't that good in the first place. It's like, are you fucking...
Are you kidding? It's 13 years later, and it's going to be the biggest movie of the year.
In a theater, in 3D, as it was shot, it is as good. On home video, it's not a home video movie, and you'd be like, well, then it sucks. Like, no, it's a singular theatrical experience. It's a fucking experience, and this is the closest thing I've ever fucking seen in a theater to, like, walking into a VR. Like, because, this shit, it started out to the opening shot. I'm like, okay, this looks 3D, but not really. Oh, he's fucking trolling you. Because then a couple shots later, it's all, oh, here's five layers of shit. Here's a heat fucking, you know when something's landing and it has that, like, heat fucking waviness?
Yeah.
That's one layer. Then there's, like, flies. Then there's fire. Then there's the ship. Then there's the mountains. Jesus Christ.
It created a whole, like, universe of, like, home televisions. Like, fucking 3D glasses and all this bullshit. And we're like, oh... This is Avatar shit.
Dude, this, like, when they use the term world building.
Okay, I gotta get the kids to watch
Avatar 1 at home, and then we got to go to the theater.
I saw the first one like on a tiny TV in a doctor's office while my appointment ran. That's 3 hours late.
Also, he makes it was pretty dope. It does a thing where the first one obviously has the colonialism and indigenous people thing, right? This one extends that to what's going on with animals. And it goes hard in a midsection. He does something that's very ballsy where he's, in my opinion, this is probably the most blatant, like, anti-whaling fucking stuff you'll see in a major motion picture besides, like, Star Trek 4. But this is really, like, actually kind of painful to watch because they're showing, like, super sophisticated sci-fi $300 million version of a fucking whaling enterprise. And it doesn't, it's not good. Because guess what? They need the whale's brains, dude. You know why? Because it slows down aging. Whale adrenochrome. Whaleochrome. Anyway, don't worry about that little detail there. So, and I made me like the fucking movie more.
Because, I already forgot.
Okay, yeah. Good. You forgot that shit because you're like, Rhett's doing his thing. I'm out.
So I stopped listening three minutes ago.
No, I'm just, okay. You know.
But right. When you said indigenous people,
I'm forgetting on purpose.
I love the fucking movie. Oh, yeah.
No. Finish your. I was going to say, I remembered another movie I saw. But
the new characters are the standouts. I don't want to give away any surprises. He does his. Dude, look at Cameron's record with sequels, like Terminator 2. That was kind of good. Aliens was kind of good.
Are you sure, dude?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm fucking sure.
I don't know, dude.
Aliens was not good.
Matt.
It was not.
Matt.
I don't understand the hype. It's boring. It's fucking boring. The first one is better, but
Matt. You're being glib, Matt. I'm just living my life.
You know what?
Do you know that
when you're feeling yourself,
you know that you align yourself with Jacob Seaver when you say that you don't like aliens.
Just.
Well,
I don't even. Just
even a blind squirrel can find a nut, man.
It's not even close to fucking. You got it. You're not even giving it its merits, though. You think it's boring? Okay. But it has several merits.
Does it?
Yeah. What do you think of the production?
Dude, it's a Weeblo. It's got so many merits.
Also, dude, speaking of which, James Cameron walked into... This was his pitch to the studio for the sequel to Alien. He walked in and put an S, and he's all, there's your movie.
Yeah. He's like, it's like the same movie, but there's more. And instead of being good, it's just another fucking action movie.
And
there's
Space Marines, and it gives fucking Sigourney Weaver an arc where she's an actual three-dimensional character, and she's nominated for Best Actress in a sci-fi action.
Maybe you missed the point where I said, it's just another action movie.
It's not just another action
movie. Alien is so much more.
It has an alien queen.
Oh, big shit.
It is big shit. It's a fucking alien movie.
She's literally big shit.
It's literally big shit. It's like probably...
Why have we not seen any xenomorph shit? Over the span of like 20 movies.
Matt. What do you mean?
Matt. Like poop.
Matt.
Oh, you mean xenomorph like feces.
They don't poop. They absorb
That's a mistake.
Into their bloodstream. That's why mistake. It's acid.
That's a mistake.
Acid. I don't know. I just made that up. Someone's going to think that's serious.
Also, I mean, why would they show alien poop?
Because why wouldn't they?
Dude, this gentleman's action choreography and mastery of space, like what's happening where in the frame...
Okay,
there's this dude next to me, like,
he's like, how good is this? How good is this? Are you enjoying this?
We were together on that. We're nodding together.
Shit.
And he's like, sorry, dude, I gotta go pee. Dude, the movie went straight arrow for 3 hours.
Why did he tell you he needed to go pee?
And then Sophia's like, did he tell you he needed to go pee? I'm like, yeah. And then she's like, why? I'm like, because he wanted to apologize for leaving church. This is fucking serious shit, man. You don't walk out on this.
It was good.
Okay.
Now,
take me to church.
I saw Violent Night and I saw Christmas Bloody Christmas, and we're doing a special twofer episode next episode on both of those films.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. And it's fucking beautiful.
Because you needed to be punished.
Punished.
Garbage day.
And I got tickets to a very special band.
I almost said The Receiving End of Sirens again. Sound of Animals Fighting.
Oh, we're going to that.
We are.
The Sound of Animals Fighting.
We'll probably have already gone to this show by the time this episode comes out.
Hey. What are you talking about?
It's a ways out, but I got tickets for a show in May.
It's a ways play.
Ways out?
And at the Observatory. And the initials are DG, Jorge.
The grills.
Close.
Death Grips. I didn't even know they were playing.
At the fucking Observatory.
That's dope.
Oh!
So I hope we see some dick.
And that shit fucking sold out like immediately.
Yeah, I bet.
You know who else sold out immediately? The Who Goes There podcast on Patreon.com. So go there. It's awesome. You can help us continue doing this show. You can help us with all kinds of super cool stuff, like
throw lozenges
for one, recording software for another, fucking all kinds of super cool stuff. And then you get to hear like the bizarre shit we did at the beginning of this episode. You get to hear bonus content and exclusive episodes and Christmas cards and Christmas presents
that we
and
just all signed.
Kinds of fun stuff.
We got a couple new homies since the last time we recorded because it has been a bit. The homie Halloween Hot Sauce has joined
again.
Hello, Hot Sauce. The homie James Hernandez, who is a family member of mine.
Okay. Hello, I was like, I don't know who that dude is.
And Dustin Rasmussen.
Yeah.
Oh, Rasmussen's back.
Yeah, Dustin. He was never here. He's just been like the homie for a minute. He's been
supportive as
and
fuck.
He's like, I always wanted to. And he's like, now I finally can. And I'm like, well.
Hell yeah, homie.
I hope it's worth it.
We hope you feel it's worth it.
Yeah.
I know it's worth it.
She.
What about you, little homie? What'd you watch?
Nothing of note. Did I say anything? I watch anything? White Lotus, but whatever.
Yeah. Matt, I just want to mention this. He mentioned it on the Patreon, but Matt watched There Will Be Blood.
I did.
Which is my favorite film of the 21st century, so I'm glad.
I also watched...
I'm glad we can get along about There Will Be Blood.
Well, there's nothing to not like about that movie.
Nothing.
Just from the very beginning, it's like... Wait, so I am a little confused about the beginning. What does he find in that thing when he breaks his leg? Does he find gold? Because they're writing
oil.
It's oil.
Well, that's what I thought. But they're writing something out that's just like gold and silver.
Yeah, because he's got a little bit of gold. Initially mining.
Okay.
But he doesn't want to tell them he found oil there because he doesn't want fucking people to go there and fucking, hey, fuck this guy. Okay,
because I thought he found oil, but then I saw them writing out gold and silver, and I was like, I don't know. Like, maybe that's how he...
rabbit hole and there will be
blood. Maybe that's how he got his money. And then I watched...
And he watches them while they weigh it. He's on the ground, like, fucking watching them. That's dope.
I watched a 2022 movie called Slashback. It's like, it felt a little bit like Prey, like the new Predator movie, but it also is very influenced by The Thing. Like, it wears its influences on its sleeve. It was not bad.
Like Aliens, dude?
I feel like it suffered from a low budget, and like, so that made a lot of the CG and stuff look really corny.
Oh, good.
But like... No, but I think had it...
Oh, cool!
Another thing, like, Aliens has really bad fucking monsters and special effects.
Jesus Christ.
Even bad practical effects are better than
bad shitty... practical effects? Aliens has bad practical effects?
No, that's not what I'm saying, but even bad practical effects...
That's another merit, then. Put it on the merit board.
I mean, aside from when the alien comes out... Oh, wait, that's the first one where he comes out and goes, whoa!
The one you said was better, yeah.
Yeah, I like that one better. Because it's got tension and suspense, unlike Aliens... Anyway, I would not necessarily recommend Slashback, but it's been included in my end of year viewing.
Oh, end of year is coming up, man. Holy
Yeah.
There are many who say Alien is superior to Aliens. It's a gothic horror film in space.
If I wanted to hear from cunts, Alien I'd queef.
Sucks is crazy.
So, yeah. What? I said if I wanted to hear from cunts, I'd queef. So that's what I think about people that like Aliens.
What?
No, people that like Alien. There are many people who like Alien more than Alien.
And they're cunts.
But very few would say that Aliens downright sucks.
That's because they're cunts. You're a fucking cunt, lot of them.
Dude, when you talk like that, what's it? She said, ooh, baby, when you talk like that,
you make a woman go wild. God, that video did shit to me. Like, whoo, that and the other one, Wherever, Whenever. She's like, even though my breasts are small and humble, so you don't confuse them with mountains. I'm like, girl, I ain't confusing shit, but let me see them.
Have her Teddy Bo Jangles ever been exposed?
I don't think so. She might have had like a nip slip, but like not like a topless shoot or anything.
We were watching Gone Girl, and I had forgotten.
That's on HBO Max now. Yeah,
it is. I have forgotten how decent of a piece Ben Affleck has,
bro. How did you
guys
forget?
Talked about it before?
On the note of Gone Girl, though, I did start listening to... I found out there's an Unsolved Mysteries podcast, and they do the creepy music and stuff. It's not Robert Stack, obviously, because he did. But
it's not?
No. Sadly. I mean, bro, like, they can fucking, they can make voice changers with Donald Trump's voice. Why can't they just put Robert Stack's voice on the anyway, they did a whole thing about Gone Girl and, like,
Gone Girl is so fucking great.
Dupe. Hella dupe.
Anyway, the Who Goes There podcast watched a little film called Bones and All, directed by Luca Guadagnino.
Oh!
Written by David Kriaknik and Camille DeAngelis.
Kriaknik.
Starring Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor Russell, Mike Rylance.
Oh, Mark Rylance.
Kendall Coffey, Andre Holland, Ellie Parker, Madeline Hall, Christine Dye, and that's basically it. The Who Goes There podcast watched this film, and the synopsis is as such. Maren, a young woman, learns how to survive on the margins of society. That's the IMDb synopsis. Now!
No, it's fun. It's too much fun.
What's fun?
I hope you drink liquor.
Drink some liquor.
Who's going to go first, Jorge? Not me this time.
You're fucking volunteering.
No, I'm not.
You just volunteered for yard duty.
I was trying to segue. I'm not volunteering. This is not the one for me to go first.
Somebody just volunteered for yard duty.
I'll go first.
That's fine.
Mom, can we watch Thirst? No, we have Thirst at home. Thirst at home. Bones and all.
They're going to think that's me and it's you. It's him this time.
That being said,
I figured because you like Thirst, you would like this movie.
I do like this movie.
It's like Thirst. I don't like it.
I don't think it's nearly as impactful as Thirst.
It's a different kind of movie.
Buy the chemistry between the two leads.
Okay.
No, I don't. Like, at all. Okay. I don't.
I can see that.
And I don't see it so much as a love story as a trauma bonding story. Because, like...
So?
No, that's what I'm saying.
No, fuck you.
You're like, it's a love story, dude. And I'm like, yeah, no, sure.
Not as a joke once. And yeah, it is a love story. Very clearly, it's a love story, Matt.
It's trauma bonding. That's what it is. And
Can I finish for once?
You're going to like actually fucking say it's not a love story? It's literally a love story.
I think it's painted as one. I don't think it is presented well as one. I even think that like... the things around it, like with Sully, I think Sully is like also has trauma, but it shows how people are willing to take advantage of people with trauma. There's a lot to it, and I do like this movie, and I've watched it 3 times now.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah,
I'll shut up now.
Yeah, I mean, I wish you would have shut up in the fucking first place, I could have got my point out.
Hey, you should listen to past episodes.
Yeah, where you interrupt me all the time.
Where he can't get a sentence out for 30 minutes.
Because you keep interrupting him?
Because you fucking keep yelling over people.
You say that. I mean, it's a nice film. I think, like, the last, like, 15 minutes almost feels like they did a test screening, and it didn't test well, and they're like, oh, we need to add some shit at the end. And that last 15 minutes is fucking wild. Like, absolutely wild. With the scene with her mom later has one of like the most impactful lines I've ever heard. I do quite like the movie. I can't really think of much negative to say about it, but yeah, I guess we'll get into it.
I could think of a couple negative things to say. It plods on for a decent amount of it.
True.
There are things about this main actress that I cannot stand. Maybe it's because it's escape room fucking hangover for me.
Is that the same girl?
It's the same girl.
Oh, I didn't even know.
Deserved better than that.
And I cannot. There are times when I'm like, dude, why are you still doing this fucking half stare into the camera for 30 seconds? There are times when I'm like, get her out of this fucking movie. I will say this, though. I think that Timothée Chalamet is doing a superb job in this film. I love that he is super cool with doing these little, like,
I don't want to say like shitty movies, but like low budget,
dingy art films.
Yeah, like kind of like art school films, and like then also Dune. And then also manages and then also manages to be like, well, I'm gonna be in Dune, so fuck you.
With Villeneuve.
So I really appreciate his involvement in this film and all of the things regarding his character arc, because there are a lot of things that deal with like father son trauma, and I'm like, yeah, dude, give me more of that, because I identify with that on a deep level. I agree with you. I don't buy into their chemistry very well, and their love story is lacking for me. The stuff with her mom is brilliant.
Oh,
I think the first scene where she's reading that letter from her mother.
That's what I'm saying.
And you're sort of like seeing what's going on in real time as she's reading it, and then she hits the end of the letter and the thing that happens. Brilliant.
The phrase, the world of love doesn't want monsters in it, so let me help you.
All of the stuff with Sully, I think, is super fucking fun. It reminds me of what's her name from Dr. Sleep.
Mary the Hat.
The Hat.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the
Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah, reminds me of stuff with her character where she's like this, sure, you know, otherworldly character that is a little bit. I don't want to say like magical, because, you know, obviously in Dr. Sleep, she's magical, but in this film, they're just fucking cannibals. Like, whatever. But I just don't. I don't like our main character. I don't like her as an actress. I really don't.
You find her kind of cloying, huh?
Yep. To an extent that is like, oh, well, like, it'd be cool if there was somebody else.
What does cloying mean?
A little too saccharine, a little too sweet, a little bit too, like, she's a little too sticky.
Doesn't seem to have much depth to you?
Yeah.
See, and I think that's part of what was with their chemistry for me.
Okay, so...
What about you, little homie?
I think you guys said some good stuff. Since you both spoke first, I'll fucking say that, and I'll point out the stuff I agree with. All the stuff you said that you liked about it.
Yeah. No, no way. Gotcha, bitch. Yeah,
no way. So, Luca Guadagnino.
Guadagnino.
He did the Suspiria remake, which I was a lot more keen on than both you guys, but neither of you hated it. It's just fucking super.
I liked it.
I thought the original was better, but...
Yeah, but I'm glad he didn't just do a fucking... If you're going to remake Suspiria, don't fucking do a carbon copy, because that's a mistake.
Call Me By Your Name is great, too.
And he did Call Me By Your Name.
And Call Me By Your Name is referenced in the Metal Lords movie I was talking about earlier.
And Call Me By Your Name has an actual cannibal in it.
And Call Me Maybe is a song by Carly Rae Jepsen.
And Rhett didn't know Carly Rae Jepsen was a real person.
And I found out from reading a Pitchfork article a couple months ago. See, and I was like,
he didn't like her, about this. And he read an article.
Yeah, but I still didn't listen to her because I'm like, oh, Matt likes her. Not listening.
And Kelly Clarkson wrote Since You've Been Gone.
And some lady wrote this as a book, and it was like a young adult novel.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that I didn't read the book. One of our listeners, Jacob Cthulhu Christ, said he read the book, and he said what Luca did with this, Luke, because we're on first name basis, what the director did with this is he really he elevated this and saw an opportunity to make an art. It does straddle a line between an art film, a romance, and a horror movie. There were sections of the movie where I was concerned I was going to come here, and one of you, if not both of you, Matt was going to be like...
I was concerned I was going to come.
I was concerned I was going to come. When they were out in that field and fucking... And the wind's blowing and all that, I was concerned I was going to come while I was crying, because that shit was beautiful, and I don't know how
you mean, like, the very last scene?
The last scene, but that's a flashback to an earlier scene. Yeah, like, that's a beautiful fucking scene. That's like Terrence Malick shit.
So it's funny because...
Like whatever chemistry is lacking or whatever, like that's just filmmaking. Like
I even saw this, Rhett was like, yeah, it's a really good date movie. And I was like, I don't think so. I had the unique experience of seeing this movie
on a first date?
The first time with my ex-wife. So that was fun.
Well, that would be tough.
No, it was totally chill. It was easy. But like, we talked about it a lot,
interrupting me with your story?
So I was going to say, after I'd watched the movie, I watched it again on a date, and like, it had a whole different vibe.
Dope.
Like when you watch it like on a date, and she cried. So that was dope. I'm like, yeah.
It is a good date movie. So that's what I mean.
It is.
Sophia's response to this was very strong. I mention this because to see the feminine response to this, I think, is important to gauge certain things, right? And so that's interesting to hear. So I want to talk about stylistic stuff real quick and just how it's a very art design movie that does a great job of not looking art designed.
Or feeling art design. Right. Yeah, and I think that's I think to me that's the biggest thing that it is very art design.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel forced.
Very much it's a lot like Star Trek, The Next Generation. In many ways. Oh no, it's not. No, it's not. No. You go into these houses and it's dingy interiors and like the stuff's peeling off the walls, but it provides all this stuff for texture and it's texture and then again it has this kind of visual motif of like what's underneath the walls are peeling and like skin. And then like he's got these tattered ass jeans where they're sitting on top of
he's half naked.
They're so tattered it's barely and it's like exposing his bones.
I laughed at those jeans. I literally like nudged Ollie and I was like, what the fuck is up with these jeans? And it was when they were sitting in the slaughterhouse and you could see just like his whole ass leg. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, when you say, Matt, that it's trauma bonding, I agree with you quite a bit. I think there's different types of love, and I think this is about there's desperation. These people are desperate, and very just so desperate. And it presents a picture where when you're afflicted with this condition, whatever you want to call it, they've got a few choices. You can stick around long enough to become a pervert with a feather in your hat. You can die, or you can lock yourself up in a mental institution.
Okay.
Right?
So now, I'm glad you said exactly those two things, where you said,
incidental.
Well, one about the pervert in the hat, but the one about, like, these people are
that's
desperate.
That's me, dude.
That's a play on the Dark Knights, die long, or live long enough, become a
so villain. My whole thing with Sully is, like, I felt really bad for him.
You should. You
so
are.
So, like,
as a survivor.
Yeah. Well, so before we even meet Sully, like, when we're introduced to our main character, we keep hearing things about how, like, she has talked about wanting more friends, you know, and she wants to meet people. And, like, you don't really understand why she has this problem. And then when you realize that, like, she's not getting her picture taken in the yearbook. So she has to move from town to town, leaving almost no trace. She can't make friends. She can't have her photo taken in the yearbook because when something inevitably happens and she has to run away, there can't be a record of her. So she basically has to live life as a ghost. So then her father leaves and she's just all alone, completely alone. And then when she runs into Sully, they make like these comments about like, you don't have to be alone and all this other stuff. And I really did feel like Sully, at least initially, didn't have ill intentions. I feel like he really wanted to like take her under his wing.
He
spoke about it. He was talking about bonding with somebody.
He didn't want to feel alone. Like they all want to be seen. They want to feel like they're not fucking outcasts.
When
not
you
weirdos.
Talk about ill intentions, those are things that are based upon norms and a consensus, right?
Right.
His are not going to be anyone else's. Yeah. He's by himself. Like he's a rare breed.
They make note of that later where I forget the boyfriend's name, but he's like, you know, oh, the other people have their rules. That's not one of mine.
Well, that's the thing that my biggest takeaway from this film is it essentially creates this like clear divide of a moment in life, right? So like everybody has specific things that happen in their life. So like let's take birth, for example. Like everybody's fucking born. Right. And there are things that happen along the way that create these branching paths for all of us. Like we can all agree that being born is traumatic, right?
Yeah. Life starts with that.
And, you know, and if the idea is that the nexus for these people leaving normalcy is cannibalism, right? So like they're born and then they're cannibals, right? The nexus for them is what happens after that event. So for her,
after the discovery of
after or even like, you know, like being, you know, being part of it, right? So for her, her father takes care of her. Her father nurtures her and shields her from a lot of the bullshit of being who she is, right? She has an incident, he moves her to another fucking school and another city, blah 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 blah. So that's her experience of this whole thing. Timothée Chalamet has had to be on his own from the get, right? And you experience that stuff that he, you know, he killed somebody and he had to survive and has had to like live on his own for whatever amount of time it is. And
I think then, it was about 4 years.
And then Sully is this completely unknown character where you're like, why is he the way he is?
Yeah.
He's obviously dealt with this thing far longer than our two...
It would twist you.
Our two protagonists in this film have. Yeah. He's been dealing with this for decades. He's like, well, I dried up next to you. What does that mean? So he allowed himself to be vulnerable with her.
Somebody had told me that like he let the blood dry.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like to allow the blood to dry on you overnight
shows that you feel comfortable.
It shows vulnerability. It shows being comfortable with another human, despite, you know, it's almost like
very intimate
post-coital. When you're like, well, I'm.
Well, it is. It's fluids.
I'm gonna take a shower, or I'm just gonna be like.
He mentions it later.
Yeah,
he
said, I'm gonna cuddle next to my.
Yeah, you cuddle while your dick's going soft.
Well, because so that's a norm to him that becomes very intimate.
Yeah,
it's like, so, I wouldn't have shared that with you if you weren't special.
Yeah, if you weren't such a bitch, I wouldn't have done this.
And that's why I don't think he had bad intentions. I think he really just wanted. A friend. Like, I think he really just wanted to be seen.
He didn't want a friend. He wanted a partner.
Well, yeah.
He wanted like a ride or die.
He also wanted to fuck her.
See, yeah, I don't, yes, I, yes, I agree.
I, so
as de- I, hold up, let me okay, you guys, and I didn't even finish shit. As demonstrated by attempting to rape her.
You don't have to be upset. I agree with you.
I like getting upset.
When did he attempt to rape her?
Well, the end of the fucking movie.
Yeah.
I don't think he made any attempt to rape
her. You've seen it three fucking times.
And I still don't think he made any attempt. He didn't touch her inappropriately.
Hey, I'm talking. Fuck, man. He said, we have unfinished business, got on top of her, and started kissing her.
Yeah.
The unfinished business was that she knew too much about him. Got on top
of her and started kissing her.
He, like, kissed her forehead. He even... Matt. Okay, I know you're talking, but you directed your comment at me, so this is now a dialogue.
He got on top of her.
I don't give a fuck. I've gotten on top of George, and I'm not trying to fuck him. Like, he could have been perverted and pulled her top open. He didn't. Matt. When he put his hand on her chest, he put it
up. Do I need to look up, like, a plot synopsis to tell you
above,
you're wrong?
Up above her heart. Like, okay, not even
I don't
want to
have an argument about...
I'm not having
an
argument.
In my opinion...
In your opinion, he tried to rape her.
And Jorge's, like, and probably the directors, and the writers, and the fucking plot synopsis, and probably the book.
You say that, but... So, like,
probably. I say probably.
He literally said...
Why do you want to die on this hill? I want to move on from this.
Because I want to prove that you're wrong.
You can't prove I'm wrong.
When he said they had unfinished business, she's like, me and this dude are together. And
that's
he's
not
like,
an interesting conversation.
He's like... That's not what this is about. I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in how much you know about Sully in that little head of yours. Because when
mutually exclusive?
When he said I dried off next to you, he's like, you know everything about me. So, like, you can't let that go.
Well, I think...
And that means he doesn't want to rape her?
I did not get the impression that he wanted to rape her.
He was raping her.
He was not raping her.
To your point, it can be both.
Yeah.
Right, so I don't know
why that's hard.
I think the conversation can be had that, like, yes, he is yearning for a quote unquote like homie to go killing people with, right? Yeah. But at the same time, like, this dude has clearly been on his own for an extended amount of time, and he has finally met somebody who matches his energy that he thinks, right? And I do think that the intent is that he is, whether or not it's like a sexual thing necessarily,
he's got a body and he's a
definitely
man.
Raping her in some regard.
Well, he's holding whether, her against whether, his will whether, and he's like whether, kissing
whether,
her forehead.
Whether
kissing
or not, her. Whether or not it's literally penetrative. Or my he's Lord. Just gonna like kiss her neck
when
or whatever.
You say kissing her, but he kissed her forehead. Bro, like,
dude, she didn't want the kiss. She didn't want to be pinned to a bed. She didn't want to be.
I guess what I would tell you, Matt, is I don't want to make the distinction between like sexual assault and rape.
Right.
This is like crazy.
And I think the end part, like, I think that was.
If she had kissed him back and wanted to, he would have done her.
I think that was more of like mourning the loss of somebody that you thought was going to be very close to you. And I think that's why he's resting his head on her. He's like, I just want to enjoy the idea of having somebody that sees me. Because I think that's what a lot of this movie is about, is feeling seen, like feeling like you're not alone. It is,
but that doesn't
and
mean...
And so Sully, I think, found thought he found that part.
I don't mean he doesn't have a sexual appetite.
Sure, but I don't even think that was... I don't think... And this
those
is from
aren't mutually exclusive.
This is from having seen it three times. I don't get the impression that his interest was sexual.
There is definitely... So, like, I liken this to vampire movies, like, right? So, like, there is an inherent, when you talk about, like, vampires and drinking blood and sharing of the flesh, so to speak, I think that there's always an inherent sexual component to these
at
things.
Least romanticized.
And so while outright he may not have wanted to have sex with her, so to speak, I do think that there is an element of him forcing himself upon her that it goes beyond, I want to just be like cool buddy friends.
I agree.
So whether or not you want to draw the line at like, well, he's just assaulting her, and whether or not you want to say like, well, he's outright raping her, I think is trying to rape her. That's a weirdo gray area that I don't want to really like get into.
I think it would have went bad places if the guy hadn't come in and they hadn't killed him right there. It wouldn't have stayed with him kissing her forehead.
I think he would have killed her. I don't get the impression he would have. I fully agree that there's unwanted physical advances, and if just that alone constitutes rape, then sure, he's raping her. But I don't.
That gets into a really shitty area of like degrees of rape, and I don't want to.
I use the word trying. I'm not saying.
Yeah. I don't want to be like, well, he only kissed her, so it's not rape.
Where this came from?
Yeah.
Right. Go ahead. Sorry. You don't think he had bad intentions?
At least not at first.
Okay. That's. I agree, and I think. I love you. You want a scissor? Okay. So check it out.
Problem solved.
I think when we say bad intentions, again, his intentions, they're not good or bad. Like, for instance, when he kills the old lady to eat, those aren't bad intentions. That's survival.
It's pure instinct. He also didn't kill her.
Okay. When he exploits her death.
And not... Fair. Well, and also not call 911.
Right.
Right.
And also...
He let her die naturally, but he at least then says, I don't kill.
My point being, he's doing things that are amoral. They're not immoral in the sense of like, oh, you're a bad... They're amoral because he's going by a moral code for survival that has nothing to do with yours or my moral code, right?
Well, he's
it
not...
It couldn't be if he stayed alive that long.
He's not a member of society anymore, so
absolutely
he's...
Absolutely not. Yeah. And so his intentions to him, most of them at that point, if you're living that, the word is solipsistically, right? He's living alone so long, right? Meaning that... No one has his code. He has his code by himself. And I think his instincts and his other stuff does get the better of him at the end. That's right. I think he does. I don't think he goes there specifically to rape her, but he's obsessed with her.
He is. He's definitely obsessed with her.
Because she's young. She's youth. She's the youth. She's a daughter
figure.
And
what's up with the youth?
You know what they say about
the youth. He's like, what's up with the youth? This girl is pretty. She could be like my daughter. And then I could get in over my head and try to rape her. He's not good. And that's one of the reasons she stays with him. She stays with him the first night. When things start getting weird, she takes off because she feels something's like, fucking off.
Did things get weird? I know she said she had like a weird gut feeling, but like...
It's also, he's too old for her. Because if this goes on, even
for a friendship, right? Like he's far too. So like, and I don't want to be like, well, like, you know, Timothy Chalamet's character is a far better match for her, but
they're the same. They're around the same age.
But clearly they are peers in terms of like their experience with what they've got going on. And again, I liken this whole thing as like, you know, you have this. You have this moment in everybody's life where it defines you, right? Like, and I think that, I don't know who said it. It was recent, but I don't know who said it, but like a negative moment in your life is far. You told me about this.
Oh, trauma. There is no There's no opposite. You know how there's usually a binary thing, and I'm not talking about gender. So I'm talking about like there's opposites, right?
Hot to cold,
right? Up yeah, to exactly. Down. Trauma doesn't have an opposite.
Well, not only that, it but nothing affects you quite as acutely as a negative experience, right? Like you could have any number of like positive experiences in your life, but when you hit that one. Negative
nothing leaves a
life.
Lasting impression that's a formative well, that's, thing, like those kinds of formative
That's why they
experiences.
Say people are a lot more likely to leave a negative review for a restaurant than a positive one. Because they, you know, they expect the positive, and well, so when it happens...
And it's a survival instinct. It was about, like, for a long, long time, you had to fucking... the organism had to think that way for protection and self-preservation. So it has to emphasize the drawbacks and negative aspects of a thing, you know? So we still... We're still wired with that fucking brain with modern stuff.
I mean, you could even crank down to like the experience of a virus, right? Like a virus will only
a virus. Humanity is a virus.
Well, a virus will only affect things that you know benefit its species, right? So, like you know, it's one of those things where I feel like this movie is an exploration of
the D. No.
in certain aspect. Well, yeah, man, I do think that there are things that we're talking about. Like, I don't want to get too much into the rapey stuff because it's a whole
and that's
a whole universe of conversation that you could have.
Well, it's part of the tension of the movie, though, is because we're not clear on his motives either, right, Matt? Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah,
that's at least part of the tension of the movie. And you do have straight up. I wanted to say this earlier before any. Drastic disagreement. that you have the benefit of seeing this movie recently and three times. I want to see this movie again.
Yeah, I think the most recent time was 2 days ago.
But there is such discomfort when he sees her later on the side of the road and he shows up in the van.
Because we weren't expecting that. I mean, like when they part the first time, you kind of think like, yeah, we haven't seen the last
of it. Well, and that's the thing. If he's willing to kill her for obsession, I believe it's possible he's willing to rape her than kill her for obsession. Because it's complete control. And it's bones and all. Like he said, there's life before, but he would probably eat her, bones and all. He would probably do the whole thing.
Do you think
he's probably done that to a woman he loved already.
Do you think he wanted to kill her out of his obsession for her, or do you think he actually wanted to kill her because she knew
it's
too
not
much about
one,
him?
It's not... When she said that too, that hit me a different way.
When she said what?
Because of what you know about me.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's because that's shame. I think he doesn't like her idea of him.
He doesn't like being exposed.
Yeah, he doesn't like... Because no one knows... He's been a loner for so long. Like, he's exposed. Someone else is walking around alive, seeing his... They have an idea of him that it makes him see himself, and he detests that.
Yeah.
So he has to fucking... He has to put that down. You get what I'm saying? And I think that's why he doesn't... You can't have friends if you're going to survive that long.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where you have to destroy what you love in order to like be able to exist.
Yeah, it's like I want you to eat me bones and all. Bones and all.
You know what? that fucking groupie that's the dickhead that wrote the Halloween movies?
Oh, yeah. David Gordon Green.
I didn't even know it. And then I saw the trailers. Also, I had no idea Trent Reznor did the music in this.
Oh, my God. Thank you for bringing
and
up
it's,
the music.
And it's weird because like... For part of the movie, the first time I watched it, I'm like, this music is really odd for this movie.
I loved it.
And then, so one of the things that I absolutely adored is they play a George Strait song in this. And he's singing to her in the truck. And the last three notes that they play of the song, because there's like, that's the
diegetic. The editing goes into it.
So that's the diegetic music. But the non-diegetic music is the Atticus Ross, Trent Reznor stuff. Yeah. And so the last three notes of that George Strait song, the diegetic music, are like matched up with the same three notes in the non-diegetic music. So it like seamlessly transitions.
I started first noticing the music when she was on like on the bus. And it sounded, it's strings. There's a lot of strings being plucked in weird ways. And it's almost kind of atonal. And it reminded me, I told Sophie, this sounds kind of like the score for Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. But just more, but no electronics.
Was that the same guy?
Or even Social Network.
Yeah, it's the same guy. But he's going intentionally. He's using acoustic stuff, but in a very kind of atonal, weird way. But it has this... There's this lamenting theme that shows up again and again that's very mournful. which fucking works really well. And then the song that kicks in at the end.
I thought specifically when we're talking about music and like the soundscape, I think that when Timothy Chalamet's character is having a nightmare in the truck.
Yeah.
That overdubbing of that like weird sound effect that almost sounds like two pieces of metal scraping against each other, where it like keeps dubbing over so and fucking dubbing evocative, over and dude. Dubbing over, and yeah. you think that like there's something happening real world when you and then you kind of realize that he's like reliving this nightmare that he's having, and and also reliving an actual thing that he experienced. That moment is an incredible piece of filmmaking,
right? And the editing of that sequence too. He's having flashbacks yeah. and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And then you...
And it's a character development moment, too. It's giving you backstory without, like, oh, here's a flashback. It is a flashback, technically.
It's an info dump without being heavy-handed about being an info dump.
And it's poetic. It's like, if you're going to do an info dump and show a bad dream, like, be poetic about it because you have a fucking movie to use.
So not heavy-handed that I didn't even realize what was happening until the third time I saw it.
That's dope.
Like, because I thought...
Because it just... flows
well, I thought the people in the dream, I knew it was a dream, but I thought he had like somehow run into the two guys from the lake again, like, because it was in such quick flashbacks that I thought it was them. And like, also those two guys, I felt like, and this goes in with my whole trauma bonding thing, like I thought those two guys like really lend to that idea, because it shows how different people handle their trauma and how different people handle things and how there's hangers on, you know, sure. like, cause the one guy, he's not even a cannibal. He's just, well, I guess technically he is, but
he's
he does it because he wants to, not because he has to. So it's even like, there's people like that when it comes to trauma, there's people who like latch themselves on to people who are damaged thinking they can fix them. There's people who
or latch to alternate lifestyles.
Yeah. And so like, that's kind of a thing. This one guy is very much addicts. Like, the one guy is very much owning it. He's like, yeah, I do this shit.
I think what happens is so Timothy Chalamet's character has been living basically an unbridled life, right? And so he meets her and essentially is a mirror to his like life. Like, these are all the things that are fucked up about you. These are the things that like, despite your upbringing, you could have changed, right? Yeah. And so that whole dream sequence is brilliant because he has now realized that maybe just surviving has not always been the right answer for him.
Well, no, and then it's one of those movies where you can feel this is not going to end well, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not exactly clear.
It's like Blade when he has to, like, you know, put his girlfriend into the sun.
It's like City of Angels when everything's good and he gives up being an angel. And then, like, all of a sudden Meg Ryan's, like, on a bike next to a truck. And I'm like, oh,
and then that Goo Goo Dolls song kicks in.
Yeah, it's over.
It's like that movie. It's like that movie with John Travolta. He's an angel. And he doesn't...
Michael.
Oh!
It's like that movie Phenomenon with...
That's another Travolta.
With Travolta that he doesn't realize he's got magical powers. Giving him every role. And then he's just got a brain tumor.
It's like that movie The Fanatic where, you know, he's autistic, but he acts like he's never met an autistic person.
It's like that movie where he's an airplane pilot and he impregnates somebody, dude, and then...
And he sexually harasses a bunch of dudes on his plane.
It's like that movie where he's like...
Wait, what was the point you just made? Because I had a thought to go with that point, and then we got sidetracked.
Okay, let's try to go back. Oh, you can tell it's not going to end well.
Yeah.
But wait. Hold on to it real quick, because I had some. That's why I was...
Hold your D.
Mentioning that shit in the first place. I fucking have no clue.
Okay, sorry, I don't...
While you're thinking of your point,
yeah, fuck
you. I thought it did end well at first. So, like, when I mentioned the last 15 minutes feeling...
No, what
like,
I mean is it's going to end tragically.
Well, right. Yeah, no. And so I thought that it did end well.
Well, in a sense, I see what you're saying.
So, because remember I said the last 15 minutes felt like maybe they did a test screening and it was like it didn't test well, so they added the last bit. I thought the movie was going to end when they're like, let's just drive the van until it breaks down and, you know, do what people do. And he goes, yeah, you want to be people? And she's like, yeah, let's be them for a while. Like, I thought that was the end of the movie. And I was like, wow, that's really sweet. Wow. That's really touching. Like, Like, that got me. I'm like,
that's okay, where I was going.
I'm like, that's really fucking corny, but it's like the right kind of corny.
Not to me, and here's why. As someone in recovery and who's seen the recovery community a lot.
Someone in recovery.
No, well, I know you don't like it, but it's the fucking, it relates to the fucking movie. These people get sober together.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And it usually doesn't go well. One of them relapses first. One of them has to eat somebody first. And then usually what occurs is there's a fork in the road. They either leave them or they eat with them or they use with them, whatever, right? Same thing. In this case, well, yeah, they wanted to lead a normal life and keep this contained. But the thing is, will the world let you?
Yeah, will the world let you? their biology won't let them.
Exactly.
They talk about that, like when it's the same thing you're talking about, where it's like, you know, the addict's dilemma is kill yourself, eat the meat, or
existentially. Toss yourself into a fucking asylum. This is like, why
those
I
are the only three choices.
This is why I loved it too,
sobriety, though. Sobriety, jail, or overdose.
Existentially, that's not just the addict's plight; that's everybody's plight. Because
the longer
you stick around, the more you're going to have to make concessions to the situation. It doesn't mean you're going to end up like that dude, but by the end of your life, you're going to break most of your rules. Not all of them. I'm not saying you're going to eat people.
You know,
you had rules 20 years ago that you were never going to fucking break.
And the only thing I don't like about the comparison to like addiction is that it like addiction for me.
I'm merely saying it's what it reminds.
No. So addiction for me is sort of one of those things where like it's an external thing that an addict has to deal with, right? That is like a chemical thing.
It's a maladaptive coping mechanism.
So for them,
there's many types of that. Addiction is one type of a maladaptive.
For them, mechanism. It's a biological imperative that they eat people. So I almost don't want to liken
it's not
it.
Though. They won't die if they don't. It's the same thing.
Even get that far?
Yeah, we get that far. Are they dying? They're fine.
Well, I don't know. That's what I mean. It's just a craving. To me, I feel.
Yeah, I don't think they do, because like she'd gone for a while without having fed, because he was even like, it's been months, and even when she ran away, like she'd only bit that girl's
finger. At some point, she says, "I'm hungry."
Well, yeah, that's
and I don't know. Like, I don't want to be like, well, this is an allegory to, you know, addiction, because. You know, I think that there is...
It's an allegory to life.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I...
Also, the fact that they were on a Ferris wheel and they only kissed and he didn't finger bang her is a mistake.
That was fucking great. See, that's what I mean. When you guys say it's not a... I know it, we mean different things. It is a... It's the most romantic movie I've seen this year, I think. It is. That fucking Ferris wheel scene is iconic. Like, it's already fucking... This movie didn't perform well, but this is like... going to be beloved in the circles that like it. It's fucking definitely a cult film.
It didn't perform well.
No.
I guess.
Dude, it's a ballsy fucking movie.
Yeah, but those trailers made it look so... Like, I was pumped for the trailers when I saw them. But, and then, like, when I learned more about it, I'm like, oh.
It's art house Twilight.
The distinction I'm trying to make is that I think that, like, for them, eating people is like drinking water, right? So it's not some.
It's not though. If you don't drink water, you die.
Yeah. Well, that's what I. Okay, so what I'm saying is we don't get that far in the movie. Like, we don't get to the point where they're.
I'm saying based upon what we're shown, they're fine not eating them. They just crave people.
I think it's like drinking beer, dude, where you don't have to and you won't die.
Exactly right. But like, if you're not drinking beer, dude.
This is the thing. This is like why it's difficult. If someone's a food addict. They don't get to quit food. They have to completely change their relationship to food, right? If someone's a methamphetamine addict, you don't change your relationship to meth. You have to quit it completely. Why? Because if you don't use meth, what happens? Nothing.
I guess
you don't die.
I guess it's kind of shown with the mom still being alive after 20 years that, you know, she doesn't need necessarily human flesh to live.
Well, see, but then the problem with that argument is that, like, when they meet the guys at the lake, she's like, oh, wait, so you do this, but you don't have to? And it's like, well, judging by your mom, none of you have to.
Correct. But you have a craving. You have a fucking...
I guess...
I still get cravings for alcohol.
I guess, but my question...
Well, and we don't just crave that. We crave... Look, when you're hungry, you're craving food because you're fulfilling a fucking... It's a biological imperative. However, you also crave social engagement. As a social species, we wouldn't have survived without craving that. If we didn't, we crave social engagement because we wouldn't have survived as a species. So there's a biological imperative. We would have been picked off by other predators if we didn't hang together in herds, right? That's why we crave that.
I guess what I'm trying to...
They're craving that in the movie.
I guess what I'm trying to explore is whether or not they need to eat human flesh in order to survive.
I don't think so.
Well, but I don't know given the small slice of time that we explore in this film. Because yeah,
I think the mom is the best indicator.
Yeah,
but you're likely to go fucking nuts.
Yeah, you're likely to go insane, and maybe that's like.
But also, it's a matter of like, can we imagine other scenarios that we're not seeing? There might be people that just walk away from the situation and never go back to it. But we don't get to see that. We don't get to see that.
It's not a long enough timeline.
Either way. Yeah, maybe they could have done it. But when I'm watching that movie, what I see is one of them, quote unquote, relapsing. And by relapsing, I'm not referring to drugs. I'm referring to returning to a maladaptive coping behavior. It's a maladaptive coping behavior for their cravings for fucking...
And who are you referring to?
I'm referring to the couple. I anticipated one of them to fucking have to eat. Yeah. And so one of them is going to take, yeah,
so to speak.
And then that's going to put a fork in the road. Or they both, there's a movie called Days of Wine and Roses where it's two alcoholics, you know, and one gets sober. And anyway, it's a fucking tragic movie, but it's like this movie. It's just not cannibalism, but it's the same dynamic.
Ultimately, I don't think they did relapse. Like she ate him, but that's because, you know, he was like, I want you to, but that wasn't so much of the relapse as, I mean, I guess in terms of like, you know, doing the thing you're trying not to do. Yes, it's a relapse, but that was meant to be very romantic. You know, it was like, I want to be a part of you forever. Like, that's I'm not going to be here,
yeah,
but I need to be with you. Speaking
of, it is romantic.
Bones and all, when we were supposed to do this last time, I made gingerbread cookies, like, and I just disassembled the gingerbread men. So it was like a head and a bone and like a dick and like all the body parts. And then
you made gingerbread dicks?
I made gingerbread body parts, bones and all. And then we didn't record, so I took them to work.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
I didn't take the dicks to work.
To unpack at that ending, and you know, even the discussion, even contemplating these ideas is good because it's not cut and dry. It's not cut and dry. But that's what I got from it, though. Like, they want to live a normal life, but will the world let them? And the answer in this case was no. And also, I'm thinking again about Mark Rylance's character. He's lived long enough.
Who's that? Oh, Sully.
Sully. Like, she's just started her life.
Yep.
She's going to have so many situations like this. Like,
well, he keeps telling her life's going to get more weird, promise.
That's exactly right. And so this, we're seeing the beginning of her weird situations. Her dad just abandoned her.
Yep.
So if she survives, the longer she survives, the more weird she's going to get, and it's going to get.
Well, and she even, when she first meets Timothée Chalamet, she says like...
Whatever the fucking case is.
Yeah, she's like, I just got dropped off, you know, and I stole a meal because I didn't know what else to do.
Because other people can smell her too. Yeah. And then when you talked about there's people who latch on to trauma, addicts fucking tend to gravitate toward each other. And people, they're also codependents tend to add, they, it's, this is not like mysticism.
Oh, yeah.
Codependent people tend to gravitate to addicts, well, whether they're sober or not.
It's like the saying, misery loves company. You can smell your own, you know?
It's energetic. It's about that. It's not just misery, it's the void. It's that thing. Like, do you have that desperation, right? And most people.
Or even the opposite of that, like the lack of desperation.
Right. Like, it's like poltergeist. They want to go towards the light and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, because like for.
This
for,
is my way out.
I mean, it
becomes
and
your higher
to
power.
To a lesser extent, like, I don't want to be like, well, you know, my marriage, but like.
Oh, yeah.
My relationship with Ronnie is like built on the fact that like we don't have this like chaotic energy and that we sort of come together on the fact that we understand that like our energy is fairly subdued. Mm. And even that fucking like can
still
like
spark.
Yeah. Can create fucking like, you know, magic and shit like that. It's
well, see, and I like the fact that you bring up that they're desperate.
And also know, disparate.
Cause I don't have,
like
I don't have a marriage anymore, but you know, when I go out with these women and they ask me like, what are you looking for? I tell them, well, I'm not looking for a relationship, because I feel like if you're looking for one, you'll find it, even if it's not good for you. Mm. And I feel like Sully is looking, the other two aren't. So the other two find something that feels right. It's like a nice connection. But with Sully, he's like, I need something.
He's desperate for it.
I know this isn't like, this might be my only chance.
Right.
I need to find like a companion, a road dog, a ride or die.
A ride and die.
You know, but her and Timothy Chalamet, like, they're not desperate because she's like new at this. And she's a little bit desperate at the beginning, which I think is why she allows herself to go with Sully.
Well, but for then, connection, though. They still want to feel like they're not alone.
Right. But then she's like, oh, yeah, no, something's not right here. Because she's not desperate enough to overlook that.
Well, and then as a whole aside to this, I go back again to that scene where they're out in the freaking, what would you call that?
A plane.
The planes. Right? And the fucking cinematography right there. Because, again, it doesn't look too flashy, but it looks gorgeous. And it feels very real. And she gives him that opportunity to share his secret with someone, because that's what's eating him alive.
Yeah.
That secret is eating him alive. And he gets to be free and share that with someone. And that's like about intimacy again. That's intimacy.
When and you're trauma bonding.
Yeah, and trauma. And when you're carrying, well, there's nothing more intimate than that if you in a certain sense. And it makes sense with what Jorge was saying earlier about those are the things that really leave the biggest marks. And are the most formative of someone's...
those are the scars that we carry with us forever. Those are the
scars, bro. No, but... And that's, I mean, that scene, I really love that. And then you talked about the music. Dude, they got George Strait. They got Cock Rock. And they have a dope-ass fucking New Order song when they're driving.
Like, wasn't there a Boy Harsher song? Wasn't that where you...
No, it was the 80s.
Oh. I wish. What was it recently that you were all stoked had a Boy Harsher song?
Every other movie.
Terrifier 2 and Halloween Ends.
Oh, yeah, that was it. Something had a Waze Blood song, and Rhett was like...
I sent him someone had made a fucking thing about Bones and All, and they were using a Waze Blood song for their thing, and I'm like, oh! Because it went together perfectly.
He sent it to me, and I was like, yep, that's the movie we watched. And he's like, yeah, but it's got a Waze Blood song. I'm like, I don't even know what that means.
And he's all, whatever that is. I'm like, I just fucking said what it is. It's a song. And then I'm like, it's a sandwich. You know what I mean? Because it was fun. But, no, and then,
Jesus Christ,
man. Oh, this movie, it's
a And real, I'm the one who's drunk.
Here's another one. It's a real physical movie. Like, they show, it's not just, like, gross eating people. There's, like, throwing up. And there's her going, like,
There's heart handling.
There's her at the beginning, like, on the toilet. And I'm like, why are they showing this? And I'm like, oh, Luca's, like, showing, we're getting naturalistic.
And also, not only that, but, like, they actually, not that I want to be like, oh, filmmaking, but there's very few films where we actually hear people urinating.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Very tactile, yeah. Like, not visceral, like, physical fucking stuff about the body.
But even, like, even the gore and stuff is very subtle until the end, you know, like, because even when they're eating that old woman, you don't really see them go into town on her. You just kind of see them covered in blood at the end. And it's, I mean, obviously it's a lot of blood, but there's not anything just like, oh my God, that's disgusting. And you don't really get anything like that until that final 10 minutes where they take out Sully. Yeah. And I was, God damn, dude, we have not said this yet, but I think you actually did. His performance is amazing. Every single thing he did, when he fucking flips open that little thing with the toothpicks and he takes one and you see his nasty fucking teeth, like, ooh, that's good. Yeah. And like, I don't know if he's got like some kind of weird, his like voice. Spinal thing, but like the way he walks where he's kind of like got this duck walk with his butt out kind of thing. Like,
that's me, dude.
Dude, it's good. His little mannerisms, like when he's talking to her at the truck and, you know, he's kind of just like pacing around and, you know, he's like, well, how do you like that? Like, how do you like
that? Well, in that moment where he calls her a cunt, like, you can really feel like the unbridled or I'm sorry. You can feel how like uncontrolled he
dangerous.
Is behind like that facade of like, well, I'm just a happy-go-lucky kind of feller.
One, even before the cunt, you see it like elevating, because like it's just like something boiling in him. Like, you know, when he first gets upset, he's like, you know, he's going to leave. And then he just goes, well, fuck you.
Like, well, fuck you.
Very
bitch.
Subtle. And then he, like, even more, like, angry. He's like, fuck you. Fuck you, Missy. You know, and then he fucking goes off on her and calls her a cunt and stuff. And then he speeds out of the parking lot. That's it's mean, like,
dude. You love this movie.
I'm telling you, I did. Like, the first time I watched
it. What's with this Thursday at Home bullshit you started with?
Because, especially the first time I watched it, I'm like, oh, somebody watched Thirst and they're like, let's do this without cannibals. And so if we're talking about
Romeo
Thirst,
and Juliet.
But if we're talking about Thirst, I think part of what made Thirst so impactful was the threat of eternity. Like, that being with that person forever,
that's,
even
that's
if it doesn't work.
That's a different part of the thing.
And it is, and it's a totally different movie. But, no, but you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like,
it's a different theme. Yeah, yeah.
Cannibals and vampires and a love story. And it's
Mom,
like,
can we
craving,
watch,
longing,
Mom, can
hunger?
We watch Dr. Sleep? We have Dr. Sleep at home. It's bones and all.
Also, like, you know what? I'm thinking about all this stuff, too, like, with the craving aspect of it. From the first time we see her bite off the chick's finger.
Dude. What a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, it does depict it as, I'm not saying sexual, but obviously a sensual thing.
Oh, I thought it was sexual. I was like, oh, they're going to.
That's
fuck.
What I mean. So the same, without even cannibalism, the hunger drive instinct and the sex instinct are very next door to each other. We're talking reptile brain shit here.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. All that stuff's together, you know? So. You know, when we get back to the end too, whether he's like, if he's eating her or raping her, it's like the same. It's the same. He's fucking, he wants to satisfy that drive.
Yeah.
Right. And we do, we don't eat people, but we have that drive. We have the drive where it's our instincts versus our sense
we,
of decency.
We eat pussy though, am I right?
Yeah.
Do you?
Do you? We gotta ask Ronnie.
Jesus. Well, I mean, at least we're not talking about her getting her stuff rubbed raw or some shit. That was fucking
That's
out
true.
Of line, dude.
That's
that was
true.
Well, that was like, you know what that was like? That was like Sully right there when you did that.
Yeah.
What?
You had the
I best. Did that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What did I do?
Previous episode. I shouldn't repeat it. No.
We were talking about some kind of movie, and I think Sophia wasn't a fan, and you're like, oh, she just had her clit rubbed raw, and he's
oh,
like...
Oh, but we were talking about...
It's still yeah. a weird thing. It's a weird moment.
I think that was pre-Red. I think that was Chris Bit.
No, this was like 3 episodes ago.
No. I mean the rubbing the clit raw.
Yeah, that's an ongoing
I think the
bit.
Origins of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Make it about Ronnie. Well, I can make it about myself.
Wasn't talking about a movie with Ron.
No, it's not the same. Because you have the thing, you have the part of your schlong that's like the clit, but it's not.
I don't have it though anymore. It got cut out of me.
I feel like I'm missing something here. I feel like
The episode is about to be cut.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do.
Like, you're not going to release it, dude?
I do.
That clit rubbing shit, out.
Yeah. I do love the movie.
I'm good.
Yeah, I honestly can't think of much, or if anything, negative to say about it, other than, like, not really buying the chemistry between the two. And
I don't like most of her, like, I don't like her when she's by herself.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's her or the character.
Also, what a weird name, Marin. Like, so many times I kept thinking she was saying, I'm Aaron. But then it's like, oh, your name is Marin?
But it's I'm Aaron.
Yeah, I'm Marin. Oh, I bet you are.
I don't care about that part. I just, you know, I'm like,
about the young.
I'm like, oh, it's Escape Room 4.
See, and I didn't even realize
Escape Room, cannibalism.
I kind of wish I didn't know that.
I'm not on board with you guys. I think she Timothy Chalamet. Oh, wait. Speaking of that, we got to mention this. A lot of people, you know who talks shit about Timothy Chalamet?
Me.
Dudes. Especially older dudes our age, because they like, because they're jealous as fuck, because the chicks dig him, and he's in a lot of shit.
He's got a triangle face.
And he can act his ass off. Yeah. It's very similar to, like, remember young DiCaprio, and it was, like, mandatory for guys to hate on DiCaprio?
Yep.
Like, stop it. Get some help.
Get like, some dick.
Get some dick, and maybe Chalamet's bony ass dick. The guy does fucking amazing in this. But I'm honestly not agreeing with you about her. I think she deserved a lot better. I even remember even mentioning that in fucking the escape
room. Room.
Yeah, I think she does a good job in this. I think the character is sorting out who the fuck she is. Like, I think Chalamet's character is a little more defined as a person because of his family dynamic,
because of the abuse he had with his dad. And it's like, what is that? Well, that kind of fleshes out who you are, you know? Like, her dad was, she's running from place to place. She wasn't dug in anywhere. She kept moving the whole time.
Yeah.
Her dad was trying to keep her moving. So she has no real, like, fixed identity. And then he just took off on her. So we're seeing this, like you said, in a really limited time period. And so I think it's actually a tough part to write and depict. So I think she does great. Okay. I think she suggests, like, a lot is going on internally with facial expressions.
All right, you can't
fucking end it like that.
Well, that's the Who Goes There podcast for Bones and fucking all. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us tonight, or this morning, or this afternoon, whichever time you're listening to us. We're heading on down to the best of Electric worst Avenue of the year, which is my favorite episode of every year.
Mine's too.
We've got two episodes before that.
Or we don't.
We've got
at least one before that.
We've got the Christmas, Bloody Christmas, and The Thing, and then Santa Jaws. Not The Thing, but the other...
The fuck?
The other Christmas.
What about actually a thing?
What about the condom movie?
That's January.
Oh my God.
Santa Jaws is the king pick for December.
So, all right, you dumb fuckers. Well, this is Jorge signing out.
This is Matt and part of my voice.
This is Rhett. And also, they showed the full new Oppenheimer trailer in front of Avatar Way of Water.
Yeah.
Jorge.
Are we just talking about another movie I'm not going to watch?
Shut probably, up. Yes.
Dude.
You know what? It can't be worse than Tenet.
Nah, dude. It looks like There Will Be Blood, but about an atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of dope.
It's fucking dope. It's fucking like the crazy. Most serious topic there is. And it's like, this works for Christopher Nolan.
I wonder if it'll come out before the bomb gets dropped on us.
Well, it should have been dropped on us a year and a half ago by your metric.
It did get dropped on us, and we're in an alternate timeline where it keeps going on. Cinco de Mayo
of this year, so it was like 8 months ago. So, you know, do math.
So you're saying we're still sitting here in this alternate timeline?
Yes.
No.
That's
what I just said.
So what happened was they had turned on the Hard-On Collider.
So nothing changed?
And that moment, it's
nothing changed for us?
It stretched it.
Or maybe it did. No, and we just don't know.
Of course.
Yeah. Fuck!
We know yet.
Yeah, we got flipped.
Also, there's going to be one where it didn't change, and that's the one we find ourselves in, not because we're lucky, but that's the one that didn't change.
God damn it. We're still making this shitty podcast.
We're in all the other ones where it did change.
What about
you going to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once, speaking of all this bullshit?
What about the one what about the one dimension where we're like super good friends with John Condit and he's like, "Congratulations, you've reached a million subscribers on anything." And we're like,
"Personally saved Dread Central."
And we talk about how every horror movie is fantastic. That's how that would happen. There's one where we're just total shills.
Yeah.
We do every interview and we fucking do nothing but like fucking blow people who make movies.
Well, this is a detriment to the horror community. Signing the fuck out. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Good. You know what they say about the young?
Laying into it.
Laying into the young?
Laying into the... Don't. No.
Ooh, that's a mistake.
That's not
just put that on a repeat.
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.